Welcome back to the Compass Podcast. Today, I'm joined by my good friend, Justin Ballard, CEO and co-founder of Jay Energy. Jay recently closed a large deal with Mawson Infrastructure and Texas Pacific Land to mine up to 4 exahash in Texas. We talk about the deal structure, on versus off-grid mining, and TPL's foray into mining. This podcast is presented ad-free by Compass Mining, the largest marketplace for Bitcoin mining. Check out compassmining.io today if you want to buy, sell, or host an ASIC. And now, onto the show. Justin, welcome back to the Compass Podcast. Great to see you again. How you been?
I'm good, man. Good to see you too. I'm always happy to talk to you, Will.
Good. Let's keep it that way. Let's talk about the deal as well. This is huge news. I mean, you talked to me about it a little bit in December. Obviously, parts were still being put together at the time, and these deals, you have to be pretty secretive about it. You don't want people to steal your hash rate or your energy, but It's out and it has a lot of big names, including Mawson. And then one name that I'm now familiar with, Texas Pacific Land, or TPL. Pretty big deal for both Jay and then also big deal for Texas and the energy scene to see TPL get involved. So we'd start there. A rundown on the deal would be great.
Yeah. So it's a 120 megawatt deal across 4 separate substation locations. They make, we have one site's 20 megawatts, 230 megawatt sites, and 140 megawatt site. They're all within about 40 miles of each other out in West Texas. Like you mentioned, TPL is one of the largest, if not the largest, I believe they are the largest landowner in the state of Texas. They have about 900,000 acres. And they derive most of their income from oil and gas activities. So they are not like an oil and gas exploration company, but anybody that is out in West Texas that is, dealing with TPL on trying to get to their oil and or trying to get to their property that they're mining on, or I'm sorry, mining, I've been in here a long time, that they're producing oil and gas on, they're going to know who that name is. And I mentioned this the other day on your show, they're about a $10 billion plus market cap company. I had done a lot of deals with them in the past when I was at Anadarko Petroleum. In fact, Ryan had some strong relationships with a couple of the guys over there as well. But one of my good friends at Anadarko, Kevin Pierce, was a director over at TPL. And so that's really what spurred the conversation in the first place, was Kevin just reaching out and saying, hey, man, we're getting a lot of inquiries from these mining groups. And we don't really understand a whole lot about what's going on, but I know you've gotten to the Bitcoin mining space. So why don't we kind of work together and figure out like what we got, and maybe you can help educate us on what's going on with this Bitcoin mining stuff. And so that was back early, like April, May of last year. So right after Ryan and I really got things going. And so one thing led to another. We secured about a 10 megawatt site on them, but then we got a few more, and they've really got educated pretty fast about what they actually have within their portfolio and that land position out there. And so, kudos to them to recognize that they wanted to make this a part of their revenue streams and part of their kind of portfolio going forward. And also, even more importantly than just kind of having the property and trying to get miners on it, they've expressed a lot of interest in actually learning about mining themselves and providing some capital dollars to actual mining operations. So I agree with you. I think it's a huge thing for not only Jay and Mawson, but in TPL, but for the entire Bitcoin mining industry, because one of the things that Ryan and I really wanted to do when we got into this space was help educate oil and gas companies to, the opportunity that they have within their portfolio. And getting TPL on board is really, I think it has a chance to open the floodgates for groups to see that, hey, this is something that is, one, legitimate, because you have maybe the oldest publicly traded mining or publicly traded company in the country looking to allocate dollars to some mining operations. That's a big deal. And even potentially holding some Bitcoin on the balance sheet. So now I don't want to speak for them. I am not speaking for them. Those are things that, they're still going to be going through, but it's all been part of the conversations that we've had with them. So To get back to the deal, though, I'm sorry to go off on, you know me, Will, I'm going to go on a tangent.
I know how this conversation's going to go. That's what I do. I have a plan and it's not going to go.
Yeah, no, it's squirrel, very different. You know, that one of those kind of deals. But yeah, so the deal is 120 megawatts across four separate substations. Two of those substations are on TPO. The other two are owned by some private families that are, you know, large landholders out there. But on each one of those sites, Mawson is putting together an SPV that will basically manage that operation. And Jay will have the opportunity to elect to participate with that entity once they hit a certain number of megawatts online. And, you know, they're Mawson, one thing about them that I was really impressed from the get-go, number one was the people they have over there. They're a great group of guys. I know they kind of fly under the radar a little bit with the public mining groups that are out there. But I met Liam Wilson early on and he's just an incredible guy. And then I got to know a lot of their other team members and I've been super impressed with James, their CEO, James Manning, Nick Hughes, Liam, everybody, Craig. I mean, their entire team is a bunch of fun guys, very knowledgeable, very hardworking. And the thing that impressed me the most was probably their efficiency. We went out to a site of theirs in Atlanta in December of last year and went back in January. And from the time that we were there, about a month passed, and they increased the capacity at their site, I think seven times. It was six or seven times what it was from the time when we were out there. And they had barely even cleared out some trees when we were out there the first time. So their operational efficiency is very impressive. And I'm looking forward to learning from them as well. You know, we are in the mining space, we're fairly established, but, you know, you look at a group like Mawson, they've been mining for about 4 years. So they're doing a good job. And I think that they are a group that people really should kind of keep their eyes on, because I think that they are watching how aggressive they are and so creative in the way that they're willing to do things has really impressed me. And I think that they're going to have a lot of success going forward. So that's the way we kind of structured it with them. Now we and TPL are getting a portion of the gross profits from that deal. It's a small portion, but we structured it in a way to where Mawson's incentivized and so is Jay and TPL. And so look, we're very blessed to have it happen. I'm very honored to be a part of kind of orange peeling a very large publicly traded oil and gas company. I think this is huge for Texas. I think it's huge for us, Mawson and TPL. And again, the Bitcoin mining industry in general, I think this could hopefully be a first domino to fall with a lot of public groups coming out.
Cool to see Jay there first. Digging into the deal itself a little bit more and maybe just some clarification. So Jay's working on like the mining side. Mawson is providing infrastructure for hosting, and then TPL is providing the land, and then the energy is going to be worked on with ERCOT through Mawson. That's my understanding. Is that correct?
That is correct. So Mawson is doing the mining as well. So they're building it out completely, right? They're going to build out all 120 megawatts, which we do kind of forecast to all be online by the end of fourth quarter this year. So they are doing that, but we get the right to elect to buy a portion of the SPV that is there. And so basically we'd be jointly owning the entire asset with them. Just proportionally, we would have a smaller percentage than they do. That's the way it's working. TPL is bringing the land. They own all the land around those substations. And they wanted to have the opportunity to participate as well. So they would be participating through Jay within the Mawson entity. So that was the structure. There's a lot of educating, I think, that is going to be going on in West Texas over the next year to 2 years. In fact, the last 3 days, I've just gotten bombarded with phone calls from ranchers and royalty owning groups, a lot of different folks, operators that are wanting to know more about the deal and how to put these things together and kind of looking at like, hey, we need help figuring out what we actually have and how this works. I'd say this a lot to people is that like you, Will, and me and a lot of the people that are kind of in the Bitcoin Twitter world, we talk in this echo chamber a lot, and we assume that this kind of knowledge about what they have and what they should do with this power that they're sitting on or that's in their portfolio, we act like we think that they know these things and that they don't. And this goes back to us being so early in the game right now, is that even though this stuff seems like second nature to a lot of us and a lot of the people that will listen to this, we're still in the education phase of getting folks and companies to understand, number one, what Bitcoin is, how it can improve their lives financially, and how it actually gives them a lot of self-sovereignty and power back. But also so the companies can understand that this is a real use of capital that can create a whole nother aspect of your business that you haven't kind of recognized before now.
Yeah, definitely. The Mazen thing is cool as well, seeing that they're publicly traded. Mm-hmm. There's only a few publicly traded Bitcoin mining companies out there. I think like 20 now, which compared mm-hmm. to the private miners out there is pretty significant. And then for Jay, it's also like a pretty big step up. Your current megawatt under management, if I can make up that term really quickly, it's, you guys have like 8 megawatts so
about
far.
Close to seven megawatts. Yeah.
So it's a big step up in terms of management.
Really big step up.
What does that look like in terms of expanding Jay? Like, are you guys hiring or are you guys?
Not yet. Well, I'm hoping we will be pretty soon. With it, the structure being what it is on this deal, we really won't be hiring people for this specific deal. What it does create, though, is some revenue generation for us that allows us to kind of take on new projects and grow our own self-mining operations, not only in Wyoming, but also in Texas. And there's a lot of, you know, this is an on-grid operation that we're doing. And you know, you and I have talked about this a little bit. We've been a very kind of focused solely on off-grid opportunities. We're not getting away from that, but we are also, you know, we're looking for the most competitive projects that we can find and ways to make sure that we're able to be sustainable through, you know, we're in a down market right now, but things can get significantly worse. And so we want to be prepared to be able to kind of weather those storms. And if that means on-grid opportunities, then we go on-grid opportunities. If that means off-grid opportunities, we do off-grid opportunities. And again, to kind of reiterate what I just said a little bit ago, is that I've been getting really kind of bombarded with opportunities over the last few days. And, you know, I've had calls just today, the amount of flare gas, the opportunities there are with just a few companies, it was over 10 million a day in gas that's available that's being flared right now. And so things like this deal kind of, they get your name out there a little bit more. And people, again, go back to the legitimacy that TPL provides. When they see a group like TPL is doing a deal with us, it allows other folks to be like, hey, call those guys. TPL's doing a deal with them. Like, they've got to be legit. Let's call them. And so, we're going to be growing. Well, we are growing, obviously. But, we're still going to be looking for opportunities off-grid, on-grid, renewable. I don't care what it is. We're going to be continuing to look for those opportunities. And, you know, as Ryan said before, I think he said it at the Bitcoin conference, he's an energy maximalist, and I feel the same way. So we're oil and gas guys at heart. That's where we came from. But regardless of what that energy source is, if it's sustainable by being profitable, because that's ultimately what's going to dictate what is sustainable, is whether or not it's profitable, then we will entertain it. And so we're going to continue with that thesis going forward.
That's awesome. Let's talk about off-grid versus on-grid, mm-hmm. which you just mentioned a second ago. Your primary site in Wyoming is off-grid, using stranded natural gas, not flared, but midstream is my understanding.
Right.
And that's a very big difference from using on-grid in ERCOT. You guys are having to work with grid operators. You're going to have to structure some sort of deal. It seems like those pieces have not been finalized yet. But mm-hmm. curious to get like your perspective on the off-grid versus on-grid debate that we've seen in Bitcoin mining circles, and then also some information about how this deal is likely to be structured with working with ERCOT.
Right. Okay. So the on-grid versus off-grid, there's obviously benefits to each and there's negatives to each. We initially started with off-grid. Well, number one, gas prices were significantly lower. And so gas was not valued much by operators, midstream companies. Like, you know, there was a lot more opportunities to get cheaper gas. That has obviously changed. And so now you've got to find some more strategic locations where you can use off-grid gas that is stranded or being flared, but you're always going to be limited by some of the scalability issues. And so that's one thing that we even knew early on. If you just go the flare route, there's a lot of downtime on wells, and there's a decline curve that you got to factor in. And so if you're starting off right off the IP of a well, the initial production, for those of you that don't know what that is, then yeah, the well's going to decline rapidly, very, very quickly. And the decline's quite a bit. And so you still get in a situation where you're either building too big and you got to take it down as it declines, or you're building it smaller to wait for the decline, and then you're still flaring a lot of this gas. And then you got the situations where the operators have to shut in for whatever reason, operational issues, things like that. So there's downtime that gets factored in there as well. That's kind of the negative. The positive, obviously, is you're removing flared gas from, you know, the environment. That's a positive, right? You also are getting it extremely cheap for the most part, which is obviously a huge benefit for a miner. But again, the scalability issues is probably the biggest negative factor for me in the downtime. For on-grid, the benefits are you're getting some of the cheapest power in the country, especially in the ERCOT hub, right? The Western ERCOT hub. That is some of the most competitive power rates in the country. A negative for it, for the on-grid, is that they are tied to strip pricing. So right now, this pricing in the ERCOT hub and the West ERCOT hub is not nearly what it was, you know, 4 months ago, 5 months ago. It's gotten hit pretty hard by the $8 an M gas prices. So now that will eventually correct itself, most likely, because you're going to have more producers come on and drill more wells and bring more gas on the system and all that. But you still have supply constraints out there that I think we're going to be in a little bit higher price environment for quite a while. There's also a negative to being on grid in the regulatory risk, in my mind. You know, I know Texas is very welcoming to Bitcoin miners, and they're doing a great job of bringing it in. But there's always in the back of my mind, and this is probably the lawyer brain in me, but there's always the fear that, you know, we get another major winter storm, things don't go quite as well as we hope they do as far as curtailing power and sending it back to the grid. You get some major outages and you get the squeaky wheel kind of getting the grease issue where as soon as some politicians see that there's some people throwing a fit about Bitcoin miners or having instability on the grid, Bitcoin miners could end up being one of the first ones targeted to be taken off. And so I think it's really important. And I think groups like Riot are doing a really good job of really making sure that they are participating in the curtailment programs and being a kind of proactive cooperative group with ERCOT and with Oncor and the other, you know, utilities out there to make sure that they are complying with those kind of programs. So we need to make sure that all the miners that are getting on grid down there need to do the same. I think it's something that if we're going to have that be our kind of narrative, which it is true, I believe it wholeheartedly, 100%, we need to make sure that we're participating in cooperating with that.
Tell me about ERCOT a little bit as well, since we're on this part of the conversation. There's been so much Bitcoin mining going down there. It's a spike in demand off the grid. And a few years ago, we had the different problem, too much supply. And so we saw like a lot of windmills going over there. And now there was like negative pricing. Bitcoin miners come in, cause demand. Demand's going up so dramatically that ERCOT's coming in and trying to redraw the rules for Bitcoin miners in the region. Right. How does that look like for you guys trying to drop contracts right now for this site? Maybe you can lend a little information for other miners in the area who are also trying to drop contracts and hitting their heads against the wall in some cases.
Yeah. Well, and shoot, I'm going to give a little plug for myself right here, probably.
go ahead.
sorry. That is an issue, right? That is an issue. There's the new ERCOT rules came out, and they're doing the kind of the test and the reviews over the modeling and the power draws and all that type of stuff for sites that are over 75 megawatts. Now this is 120 megawatts, but it's at four separate sites. And so we're kind of avoiding, and I don't want to cause any undue attention to ERCOT trying to come in and sneak in and get us, but we're not violating any type of rules, and we're well within. And from what they're trying to do, I think it still makes sense. But we are, every one of our sites is less than 40 megawatts, is 40 megawatts or less. And so that's one way to, you know, reduce your kind of draw that you're having on one particular spot within that hub. And so it's dispersed more, it's decentralized, so it's better. And that's kind of one of the things that, ERCOT didn't have that rule before we got going, but that was one of the things that we actually looked at as an attractive thing, is that you're dispersing these sites across. So if you have an issue at one, it's not taking down all of your operations, right? So that's one aspect I think people need to consider. I know there's these massive farms out there that, you know, that's attractive, but I think that there's aspects to how we're setting this up with Mawson that Mawson knew right off the bat. They identified that early on, was like, we like having separate sites that are, you know, 40 megawatts, 20, 30, 40 megawatts. So that, especially considering they're fairly within, they're within a region that you can kind of get to fairly easily. So, that's one aspect of it that I think was very, really kind of, I don't know, forward thinking on their part, was that they identified that that makes this probably more attractive. And it just was a kind of a, it was just the reality of the way it was going to work for us, because we were going around. I was trying to identify, all right, here's substations. Do I know the landowner? Let's get it if we do. And so that was basically what I was doing. Is it was like landman 101 work, is you go kind of lock up the property that you want, and then you go find the way to develop it. And the best way that we could do that was finding a good partner like Mawson and putting it together. But as far as going back to ERCOT, again, sorry, will I jump off on tangents? So going back to
keeping ERCOT, me on my toes at the very least. I'm like, did I ask that question already? No, he's answering it. Wait, did I? He answered the question I was going to. Oh, okay.
My bad. But so the way that ERCOT kind of West Hub works out there is that the prices will be bid out. And we are working with Priority Power, as pretty much everybody out there is. We're working with Priority Power on this deal. And so, they are going to bid out the PPA to the retail providers that are out there. And, you know, Mawson will be able to decide who they want to utilize for that. As far as the pricing that you mentioned, like there's negative pricing and the overbuild on the grid and things like that, there is still negative pricing out there, despite the fact that your overall energy price is going to be higher than what it was just a few months ago. What I think miners are going to do, and what I think Mawson will likely end up doing a lot of, is kind of playing that power market game where you're looking for the arbitrage during peak demand times. They'll only sell power back during that time. During lower, like when the prices go negative, obviously you want to probably consume more power at that point. So I anticipate them playing that kind of arbitrage game a lot. And I think that's what you got to do, considering gas prices are what they are, and you're not going to get the same kind of prices. But even with all the building of all the renewables over there, and yes, gas prices went up quite a bit, we're still going to see this same like wild swing on a day-to-day basis. Like you'll see in the morning, it might be $400 a megawatt hour. And then later on in the day, you're going to see negative $5 a megawatt hour. And so it fluctuates tremendously throughout the day. Even with, you know, there being the price fluctuation and you paying more as a retail purchaser, you're paying more than what you would have paid before, you still can take advantage of those different kind of markets out there.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's what makes ERCOT kind of unique. Mm-hmm. You don't have these same opportunities all over the country. ERCOT's a very kind of unique situation.
One last question about that before we finish up with TPL. Mm-hmm. We haven't devoted enough attention to that topic itself. I've gotten some information from some miners saying that ERCOT's starting to drag their feet on things. They're redrawing up the rules. Mm-hmm. What's your take on this in the next year or so? There's supposed to be gigawatts of Bitcoin miners going live in West Texas. Obviously, it's going to change the rules a little bit because there's pressure points that are being hit. I'm curious to get your take on it.
Yeah, I think it's unavoidable, right? The industry has exploded in Texas, and it's just going to continue to explode. Right now, we're just in the early phases of where people are trying to get deals set up, and people are trying to secure power. Some of them are building their own substations right now, and so I think it's unavoidable. And I know most of us in the Bitcoin world are there's a lot of libertarian kind of mindset, and we would prefer there to be hardly any regulation over stuff. But I think just realistically, in the society that we live in, there's going to be. And you know, ERCOT went through a lot with the winter storm Uri back in 2021. And I think that they want to make sure that they are prepared for any situation that comes down in the future. And so, I do think that what we say they're redoing the rules. I don't know if it's redoing the rules or if they're just trying to make the rules. And, cause we are, this is a new industry. I want to say, I think there's about 150, megawatts that are actually participating in the like LR response and all that type of all the different ERCOT programs out there. So that's not a ton when you think about the amount of Bitcoin mining that is coming onto the grid. And so I think they're just trying to do their due diligence on making sure that the power that is being dedicated to mining operations is actually there, and that this isn't going to overwhelm the system. I just think when you hear, like, even like you just said, like the 5 gigawatts that we're talking about coming on, that's a huge number. That's a huge number. And so I think that they would be doing themselves and they'd be doing the state a disservice by not looking into some of the stuff and just trying to make sure that, look, we're ready for this influx of miners that are going to be coming on. And we're prepared to handle that. We've done the studies to make sure that our grid is stable enough to handle this demand that we anticipate over the next, you know, 2 to 3 years.
Yeah. I'm curious to see what the total gigawatt percentage comes online.
I've heard just
a ton. Let's turn to TPL as we close up the conversation. So you gave us a little bit of the history beforehand. They're like one of the earliest publicly listed companies. Are worth like $10 billion. Their market cap's $10 billion right now. Can you walk us back through TPL though, like how they were formed in Texas, they've done in the meantime and what they're up to now?
Right. Yeah. So they've been around basically since Texas became Texas, since the land grant. And the way they got their property position was Texas Pacific Railroad. And so when they were building the railroad through there, there was a land grant and that property, it was kind of checkerboarded. And I don't know, I use oil and gas lingo, and I know you guys don't know what I'm talking about, but they use section township range up there. And so that's the way the land is kind of carved up. So it looks like a checkerboard, and they've got kind of, if they had all the black squares, it's here, 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 you know, it's kind of like that. And so, and then over time they started acquiring more property and they were a trust for a long time, the Texas Pacific Land Trust. They went public. And I want to say back in the 20s, maybe even before that, but they developed, it just so happened that property was situated on some of the best oil and gas reserves in the nation, actually the best in the nation. And so once that discovery kind of happened, you've got so many pipelines that got to go through, you got water that needs to get taken through, you have oil and gas companies trying to get surface sites so that they can drill put the pad on the property. And so they just slowly began to be a more and more prominent player in the oil and gas space. And they also owned a lot of minerals as well. But most of their revenue is derived from surface operations. So SWD wells, saltwater disposal wells, that's the water that's produced from an oil and gas well. They dispose of it back into the reservoir underground. They also, like I said, their water team that handles putting water pipelines. I believe they even do some recycling. They own something in a recycling system. I'm not for sure on that, but they just continue to build out their land position. And with it being in the oil and gas reserves area that it's in the Delaware Basin, it just really kind of exploded their value. They've also been getting very heavily invested into renewable projects, which is another aspect of this whole deal that I think is, you know, people are probably not obviously thinking about it, but I think it gives Mawson a huge opportunity for growth over the next several years by working with TPL and us on some of the renewable opportunities that are going to be situated on that property. And so, yeah, I mean, they are as conservative kind of old school group as you can get, but they're also showing that they're one of the most forward, proactive thinking groups that you can get by becoming one of the first groups to allocate some large capital dollars towards some mining operations. So, and not doing it off flared gas. I mean, like, that's a big deal. You know, a lot of the public companies look for opportunities to kind of dip their toes in the water and mine Bitcoin, but they want to do it as flare gas for the ESG narrative. This is, TPL is looking at this like, this is a great opportunity for us to get involved in a space that we think is going to be huge in the future. And so I really applaud them for being aggressive and thinking forward on it. So I didn't get my plug though. I want to tell you my plug. I've had a lot of outpouring or interest calls from landowners, ranchers, oil and gas companies, really all kinds of people, other Bitcoin mining companies, to help them figure out how to structure deals. And in fact, I got a call from a royalty owner group the other day that was a really big group. It was about the TPL deal. I have opened up I'm an attorney, and I know that's a bad word to some people too, but I've opened up a law firm that I am going to be working with some folks on kind of helping them put together these type of deals on their own property and things like that. So if anybody ever has any questions about how to structure these things or how to look at it, because while we're very similar to oil and gas, it's very different too. And I think that the landowners need to recognize that the miners have certain economics that they got to hit, and it's better for both parties if they're able to hit those metrics. So there's a lot of kind of education that needs to go on, not only with the oil and gas companies, but with the landowners as well. So like, this is a new market and you can't treat it just like oil and gas, even though it's very similar to oil and gas.
Yeah. What's it called? Ballard and Sons or what?
J Ballard Law. Works like J Energy, J Ballard Law.
So yeah. Love it.
Hey, cool. Now you think on my established block height, 732.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. People are gonna be like, what is that? What is that?
totally.
Justin, thanks for coming on today. Where can people find you and track the developments at J Energy?
Yeah, Twitter's easy one, JLB_Oso. Also our website, jenergy.com. You reach me at email, justin@jenergy.com. So really any of those ways is good for me. LinkedIn too. I'm on LinkedIn. You guys can reach out on LinkedIn.
Nobody uses LinkedIn. He's on LinkedIn.
Yeah, man. So, but that, yeah, any of those ways, they can call you and ask you too.
True. They can just hit me up. I'm not going to give out my phone number though. Cool. Justin, thanks for joining us on the podcast, and hopefully see you again soon and maybe even TPL in the near future on this podcast.
Yes, actually, I would like to have them join us sometime if you are open to it. I'd like to
have always a spot.
All right.
Always a spot.
Perfect. Kevin and Huntley Burke and Kevin Pierce were instrumental in helping me get this done. So I want to really give them a shout out and thank you for that. Liam Wilson too over at Mawson. Just thank you for putting up with me, as well as Tom Hughes. Got to give him credit. He really got annoyed, I'm sure. But
you only get one plug on the show. I'm sorry.
All right.
You already used it.
It's one long string of plugs. All right. So, all right. Well, thank you, Will. I appreciate you guys having me. And anytime you guys want to talk to me, I'd love to chat.
For sure. Catch up soon.
All right, yeah. Man. Bye.